Welcome to the Ministry of Geek. I'm Richard F.
And I'm Richard S.
Well, Richard, it's a bit different this week.
Indeed.
We're going experimental.
We have.
We've completely rejigged the entire studio, and we're actually not doing this in the digital lair as we normally
Even close to digital lair, because move into your kitchen at one point.
We did. So this is kind of like even more analog than that.
That's true.
Yeah, so listeners, if the audio quality is a bit more crap than usual, I think we can blame the new surrounds.
Yeah.
Now, Richard, you want to explain why we're doing it here, why we're slumming it?
First of all, I just want to say I do not believe we're slumming it, but let's just explain the why first. So, a lot of our podcasts historically have been done quite late at night once our respective children are asleep, and I've driven over to the digital lair. And I was starting to find it just a little, little bit challenging.
Yep. Sorry about that. If that kind of increased the volume momentarily to beyond deafening levels. Yeah. Sorry about that.
I just felt if we did it during the day, then that would we might have a bit more energy. Might be a bit more energy.
Yeah.
And so we're actually
experimenting
in one of my offices.
Yeah, that's good. And there's a big reason why we're a little bit late in this one. That sneeze probably gave it away, really.
Yeah,
my viral filters. Obviously, I'm not running McAfee or Norton's internally on my body, but I was a bit stricken with the flu.
That's right.
A couple of weeks ago.
So are you feeling better now?
I'm only just starting to get to sort of semi-human, Richard. So I sound probably a little bit deeper, my voice, than usual.
Apologies
to our listeners.
If they like your lighter, sexier voice.
That's right. Well, it's kind of like auto-tune, really, isn't it?
It is. Hey, I wanted to address the other concern that this was a substandard location. I was just thinking about the overall positive energy, the kind of natural chi that's here.
The chi.
Yeah, you know, within 100 metres of here, you can get to a Dick Smith's, a JB Hi-Fi, a telecom shop, a Vodafone shop.
Well, indeed. But I can't seem to get any decent Wi-Fi here. Or is it just that I'm not trying?
There's an excess of Wi-Fi in this
building. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we're not online. We're doing this sort of disconnected, unwired.
Unwired. So well, yeah. You know, every week that I come to your place, I've been unwired. So, anyway, you're just experiencing what I experience.
Oh, right.
It requires preparation.
Now, I have to say, we've got an interesting setup here. I've taken the blue, this blue snowball microphone. It's sitting atop a, what is that? It's just some kind
of... It's a pen holder.
It's a pen holder.
Yeah.
And it's plugged into my MacBook Air, Richard.
That's right.
So this is a grand experiment, because we've never recorded a podcast on my MacBook Air. Hopefully it can cut the mustard.
That's right. Nor have we not for a long time had the benefits of the snowball with presumably the dampening effects of its little feet.
Of its little feet, yes.
On its little
table. Don't know if it's going to get the same kind of
because you know when you have like when you get like audio files get their speakers, they've got to have points on the bottom so that they're grounded.
Yeah, they're isolated from the vibrations.
That's right.
Because, like, my speakers at home, they're on those little wedges, little rubber wedges to get them angled.
I think you just did that to point at your ears.
Well, it was partly that, but also, in a vain attempt to dampen any desk vibration.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they look pretty top flight.
those little wedges I got from the Mitre 10 down the road.
Yeah.
For about $10 each or whatever. No, that was all good. So, yeah.
Well, I was going to talk about your MacBook Air. I mean, we talked briefly about your MacBook Air.
Oh, that was when I first got it.
When you first got it. But
I'm living.
What I was impressed about this is that we had a gaming evening.
Oh yes,
a LAN party.
Yes, Counter-Strike.
For those of you that like that particular term, and this was your gaming rig.
This was my gaming rig. I decided to make a bold choice, bold statement. Actually, it was a bit of a style statement, Richard. I thought, well, look, it's a little computer. It's only one of these 11 inches, so it's got a pretty low res screen, 1366 by 768, I think, or something thereabouts. And I thought, well, that's good enough to run a game. I've only got small eyes, so I figured the small screen would be okay. I was concerned about portability. And actually, it held up really, really well. I actually think that the integrated HD 3000 Intel GPU on this is better than the discrete NVIDIA graphics accelerator on my old MacBook Pro.
Okay.
Because this is like 3 years more advanced.
Newer.
Yeah. And the mere fact that, those 3 years have actually really improved the graphics, even though it's built-in graphics. And
even Intel can get it right after all the years they've
been
trying. Yep.
No self-respecting hardcore gamer would use a computer like this, though, for gaming. But we're not hardcore in terms of gaming.
I mean, we haven't got a lot of self-respect either.
Certainly don't have.
No.
Yeah. So I don't know, it performed really well. I'd actually have to say I think graphically it was performing better. I can't say that it actually improved my performance. I did note that one of the members of the other team had a MacBook Pro of the same vintage as mine, so clearly using the same old hardware, and he was kicking ass.
Right.
So clearly it's got absolutely zero to do with the machine.
Exactly. Could come down to some talent.
I was going to say skill? But it's probably in a similar vein. Yeah, skill and talent, of which I obviously don't have a lot of when it comes to gaming. Richard, I just saw something over there that's caught my attention, but I won't mention that just yet.
Are you talking about the iPhone 3GS?
No, I'm talking about that swanky Microsoft mouse that you've got there.
Yes.
So I'll talk about that in a moment.
We'll come back to that.
But I just want to say, this MacBook Air has been a breath of fresh air, Richard. That's a bit corny. But I've been toting it around all the time. I take it home from work, which is something I never used to do with my old machine. The only bad thing about it I found was when we had that gaming event, there is no Ethernet port on this baby. The chassis of this machine is not thick enough to accommodate an Ethernet plug.
Right.
So I had some unholy-looking dongle, if you recall.
Yeah. Do they come bigger than that?
No.
No.
You know, that dongle, which is like a USB to Ethernet adapter, and it only goes up to 100 megabit, because obviously USB can't handle gigabit speeds.
Yeah.
I could if I had an Thunderbolt or Thunderpants adapter. Don't have one of those yet. So, I was kind of slumming it at 100 megabit, but I think the switches we were using are 100 megabit anyway. So
I don't know. We got some pretty hardcore switches there. Cause,
is that Cisco 59 port?
Because it's quite funny. We start off, there's less than a dozen of us maybe. We start off with pretty normal sort of commercial.
Yeah.
Not commercial, sorry. Consumer grade switches,
little
right?
Little Belkin
and then,
switches.
And then, Netgear. And then, if it gets above a certain number, we have to bring out the big guns, and it's a full, rack-mounted.
Yes, it's a Cisco.
Yeah, that's brought in by one of our networky friends.
That's right. It's good to have networking friends who work for...
It takes time to boot.
Yes.
It takes a long time to boot a switch that boots.
Yeah, the other ones, you just plug them in. They're online. You just plug your cables in, and there's like, oh, no, we're just going to wait for the switch to boot.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah.
What? And in fact, I think it takes longer than the server that we're running.
I think you're right.
But, oh boy, it
looks good.
It looks good. There's literally about 60 ports that you can plug into.
Yeah.
We can hold like multiple LAN parties.
And maybe that's it. Maybe what you need to do is run a couple of USB connectors. Get yourself 200 megabits off it.
Yeah, I could multiplex the
Multiplex
that connection, yeah. So, or we could actually just start running wireless access points at those LAN games.
We
could go 21st century,
I think we tried that once. I think we tried wireless, and I think we've tried wireless mice, and neither of those... Coming back to the hardcore self-respecting gamer, I think
you want wires.
People have just become obsessed with lag. It's like it's not that I'm playing badly. I'm getting a lag on the Wi-Fi.
Like a 2 millisecond sort of lag on that.
Yeah, because on the one hand you said you're unhappy with 100 megabits, but Wi-Fi is only going to get you to 70 or 80, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I don't think Counter-Strike sources are particularly demanding on the network. I'm surprised actually that our friend isn't running some network monitoring tools.
No, they probably are running
on that little switch that he's... Or that
our identity is being stolen right as we speak, or being exploited right as we speak.
Indeed. So. I'm glad to be exploited. But tell me about that mouse, Richard.
Okay, so you encouraged me, I fell for it, to get one of these Microsoft Explorer mice.
Microsoft Touch.
I don't know.
Really? So what's so explorational about it?
Well, they're all called Explorer. Any of their top-end ones are called Explorer.
Oh, really?
From memory.
Okay.
Sorry, I do apologize. I can't actually remember what the darn thing's called.
That's a good-looking mouse.
It's a good-looking mouse. It came in a good-looking...
Can I touch it?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can. It came in a good-looking box, too.
Is it Bluetooth or something else?
No, it's dongle. So it's got a little, one of those little nano...
Is it infrared, is it? Or what, RF? Why is it not Bluetooth, Richard? It's certainly got some interesting looking symbol on the underside of it.
That's the blue laser, which is the very high resolution.
Right, if I look into that,
the old red lasers.
If I look into that, will
just
that
remember, don't you move something that's doing stuff on my screen.
Just
FYI.
Okay.
So it's RF. I mean, RF generally probably has better battery life
than Bluetooth.
Than Bluetooth, yeah.
Right.
That's probably why they do it. I thought it was really interesting. So it's covered in these little X's.
Stunning design,
which I thought was
Richard.
Which I thought was just kind of design, but it's tactile as well. You can actually feel the.
Is that for any purpose except to make my fingers feel like they're getting grip?
I think it's. Yeah, I don't think it has any purpose. Unless, it could. From an enduring perspective, it might be part of the touchscreen, but it seems unlikely given that most touch pads.
It's touch sensitive. This mouse. So if
yes,
I, if I
yes.
Just
so there's no scroll wheel.
There's no scroll wheel.
Well, there is the specific scroll area, but it will
right.
select.
Wow, that's can you turn your screen?
So this is very similar. Yeah. Right? This is obviously very similar to the Microsoft. The Apple Magic Mouse.
This is all over that Magic Mouse.
Yeah.
No, seriously, this is actually nice to hold in your hand. I like this.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if it's compatible.
And
with
so
my
it's got a few gestures.
Yeah. Oh, really?
But not very many.
Yeah.
From what I can ascertain, there's like a
little bit crippled.
I can't do it with my left hand. So
yeah.
Like a three finger.
Oh.
Exposé style.
Crikey. Now, is that built into Windows, what you're showing me there?
No, I think it came as part of the drivers that it installed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
wow.
So I,
So that is exactly like Mission Control.
Is it Mission Control? That's the one, yeah.
It's just Microsoft Mission Control.
That's right. You can do a few gestures to try and take it down from full size to half size.
Wow, yeah. Do you use the gestures much on
that? No. It was kind of cute. As a mouse, I thought, it's kind of cute, but I don't find the gestures that useful.
Yeah. So without the gestures, what else is good about this? What buttons has it got?
Well, it's using the touch nature to just have the left and the right as being more or less virtual.
Right. A bit like a Apple mouse as well.
Yeah,
there's no
exactly.
physical
buttons. There's no physical left and right buttons. Yeah. In the same way, there's no physical scroll wheel anymore.
It kind of looks like on the top of it as if it would blow air through the surface of it to keep your fingers cool.
Well, yeah.
Which would actually be an innovation,
I think. A little hockey puck.
Yeah.
Float over it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of cool.
It doesn't do that, though, does it? It is a really good-looking mouse, Richard. It almost looks like like the Tron of mice. If you have a look at the profile, you can imagine Tron wearing or using one of these.
Yeah. It's nice.
How much for one of these babies, may I ask?
20.
90?
Yeah.
Less than $100.
Yeah.
It seems like a bargain. What do you rate it out of 5?
As a mouse, I think it's pretty comfortable. It moves around. I think if you've grown up with having left and right clicks where they're very definitive
buttons,
like physical buttons, then the virtualness of it I find off-putting.
I'm used to that.
So I guess if you're used to that, then that's okay. Look, I didn't swap out my other mouse, so I only plugged this in to show you.
Really?
I've kept using the mouse I had because it was a little bit smaller, and I move it around a lot. But there's nothing wrong with it, but at the same time, I wouldn't rave about it. The gestures, I don't know, it's a bit
give
novel.
Or take.
The number of times that I need to actually swap applications and that I wouldn't do it in ways that I was already used to using, off the start.
How about gaming with it next time?
I don't think so.
Why not? Not enough reports per second from the infrared?
I would say
from the blue laser?
I could give it a go.
I'll
give it a go.
You look cool. You'd out-psych everybody just with the look of that mouse. Ooh. They'd think, ooh.
Because I could say all those little X's on it, little crosshairs, auto-tag.
Exactly, auto-targeted.
I could maybe, what's it when you move left and right?
Strafing.
Strafing, yeah.
Yeah, you could strafe by just dragging, just
and even if it's not true, that kind of stuff messes
with people's heads. And then you could also, if you really want to mess with their heads, hold it up, and then the blue laser, because I don't think anyone else has got blue lasers, Richard.
Blue's becoming a bit...
Is that on vogue?
Yeah.
Well, I noticed that the gaming mouse I've got is a red laser, very traditional.
No, I'm
very
sure mine's blue.
No, I don't think so. You've got the same as me. It's one of those Logitech MXE thingamajigamies.
It is.
Did you notice how we had a bit of an escalation in an arms war when it came to mice? When one person got a good gaming mouse, one of those Logitech ones, and you notice everyone else started buying them as if they had to somehow keep up with that arms race. They were a bit concerned that, if I, swap over from the Dell mouse that I get in the box of my laptop and if I stick with that, somehow I'm going to be disadvantaged in the gaming arena against all those other blokes who've gaming mice.
I really bought into all this crap about having adjustable weights.
I did too.
I think about in the second time I used it, all my weights fell out somewhere and I've never put them back.
Yeah? So. Oh, no, my weights are... I've spent minutes, Richard, trying to customise the weighting of that. But it's largely psychological because we've played against guys who, they're probably idiot savants when it comes to Counter-Strike. They play with like a business desktop computer that's got probably no sort of GPU in it.
Yeah.
They're using the out-of-the-box mouse that comes from Dell or Toshiba, and they're still kicking butt.
Yeah.
And again,
it's not right,
skill and talent versus, equipment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We need equipment.
We're like the Navy SEALs.
Yeah.
Because they're all about the technology and the key gear, where those other guys are probably more like New Zealand SAS, where it's all about the training and, you know, and they could probably kill you with a rubber band.
True.
And a sharp stick.
True.
And wouldn't have to worry about the fact that I've got, like, you know, some kind of super smart weapon and a UAV circling above.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you're going to get one of them new iPhones?
I was a bit disappointed, actually.
Why?
What
did you expect?
I wasn't disappointed in that, you know, in that it's a bad model. I wasn't disappointed in that it's not a worthwhile phone. And I wasn't hugely disappointed because I actually don't really care. Mostly I was disappointed that I wouldn't have a phone that looked different from yours.
it would, Richard, if you got the white one. If you got the white one.
Ah, true.
You know, and I'm sure if you look at the back, surely on the back it says 4S or something, doesn't it?
Do you think that's the reason? Do you think they thought, look, we can't bring out the 5, we've only just mastered a white 4.
White 4. Look, I'm not at all, maybe I'm unusual on this, but I am not in the least bit surprised they didn't release a new form factor. I would have actually been surprised if they'd brought out a new one that says, oh, look, completely different shape and feel and form factor. It's like, you know, this is a good, solid design. It's kind of like that whole 3G, you know, that whole era of 3G, 3GS.
Mm-hmm.
They're virtually identical looking devices,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so they kind of got to that point where it's like, oh, we've got the form factor okay, we've probably got the economies of scale and the supply chain and the manufacturing. Those little Chinese guys know how to assemble these things okay. Let's just stick with that for a generation or a year or two and just, you know, squeeze performance out of it. It's kind of like what they do with computers.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that? Why do we need a new form factor all of a sudden?
Oh, I don't disagree. As I say, that my disappointment was not based on the technology
you're reaching
out. No, well, no, not at all.
It's purely vanity.
One-upmanship. Actually.
One-upmanship, brickmanship. Yeah. You want to just have a different
look. That's the basis of our whole relationship, isn't it? One-upmanship. So, yeah, I mean, you know, making it faster, yeah, great.
Yeah, great.
But
that voice control, I like the sound of that. You like gesturing at things. I like to shout at stuff. So my idea of the perfect user interface would literally be to talk to my phone. And isn't that what people do anyway? They talk into their phone. So why would that be unusual? That'd be
The problem is you could be thinking you're talking to somebody, but actually the computer's doing stuff. Can you pick up some milk? And it was like, well, I've added that to the shopping list. No, sorry, I thought I was talking to my wife. I thought I actually want the milk picked up.
That would be kind of embarrassing, really, wouldn't it? I wonder if you can change the voice to a male voice as well.
What I found improbable in the whole presentation was that the assertion that it worked great on the 3GS.
It doesn't, does it? Does the voice stuff...
iOS 5.
Does it work... Oh, okay. I was going to say, does the voice stuff work on a non-4S mobile? I don't think it does it? It needs that A5 dual-core megaprocessor.
That's interesting, because, voice recognition's been working ever since we had 386s.
It has.
Yeah.
Arguably not well.
No, but it was okay.
Yeah, true.
When we got to 486s, and even better when we got to Pentiums.
Well, that Siri software, which is the whole what that thing's based on, that used to run on the old 3GSs. It used to be an application you could buy in the App Store in America. So I don't see why you need that. Do you think that they've just said, look, you can only run it on a 4S to make people go and buy a 4S? Would they do that? Would they stoop to that kind of lowness,
I don't think
Richard?
So. No.
You know? Because that would offend me, frankly, you know.
Yeah, in the same way that, you know, I can't have a Wi-Fi tether.
Yeah, but that's because your hardware's old, you know.
Well, so is yours now.
Well, yeah.
It's one of those old Fords, isn't it?
True. But, I mean, I wouldn't buy a new phone just so that I could tether.
Well,
but I might want to buy a new phone so I can talk to it.
Really?
Yeah, well...
Beyond the novelty of... I mean, what are you going to tell it? What is it you've always wanted to say to your phone?
I just think, Richard, I want to move into the 21st century. I've mastered the touching and the gesturing. I know how to use a keyboard. I want to use my voice. I want to have the kind of experience that Dave Bowman on, 2001 had with HAL.
Yeah.
I want to be able to talk to my computer and my computer to ignore me.
So presumably it's different from the old voice control. So the old voice control,
I'd say
I'll dial Richard Foy,
and
then it would play a song.
I never got that. I could never get that voice control thing to ever work. Have you ever got it to work?
No, and what's more embarrassing is if it does decide that you said dial something, it'll start dialing that person. You think, no, that's nothing like what I said.
Yes,
and then you've got to hang up.
Yeah,
and,
it's embarrassing.
Really awkward when you're driving.
Yeah. Is that why I keep getting all those calls from you in the middle of the night?
I think so, yeah.
So, yeah, but wouldn't you like that to work?
I would like it to work, yeah,
well,
don't get me wrong.
So this...
But not in a, it would change my everyday behaviour.
Oh, wouldn't I think it
So what
I
are you hoping for? You'd say, like, news or mail?
No. Send a text message, so I'd be like, instead, I'd be walking down the street and say, text message to Richard S, tell him that I'm going to be a little bit late.
Right.
Or, wake me up at 6 a.m.
Why don't you just ring me?
Well, we never call each other.
Oh, okay, sorry. All right, okay.
We never do that, Richard. We always use some form of messaging.
Okay.
God, I don't want to talk to you.
Christ, right. Yeah.
No, and things like, wake me up at 6 a.m. I often have to go on a nightly basis. I wonder if I need to do this, but I go into the... clock thing, and I turn it on, and I say, wake me up at such and such a time. Right. And sometimes I modify it.
Yeah.
You know, my life would be changed if I could just say... You know, depending on how I feel, it's like, oh, wake me up at 6 a.m., wake me up at 6:30 a.m., wake me up at 6:45. And I don't have to go into that little application and use a little scrolly thing and do the on-off
thing. So is that what is promised?
Yes.
Right.
Richard, the demo showed that.
Is that the use case? Oh, I haven't watched the demo.
Well, I heard.
I was working today.
It was running at 6 a.m. Yeah.
Said, wake me up at 5:30, I need to watch the live podcast.
I had my daughter wake me up this morning for that. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm not exactly about to go and buy a new phone. I can't afford to do that kind of thing every year. That's ridiculous.
iPhone 5. Well, no Zune.
No Zune. No. That's got to be gutting for a lot of Zune owners and lovers around the world.
It has to be, yeah. I mean, you know, those people that are that way inclined, I guess it is disappointing.
Do you know anyone with a Zune? I know one, maybe two people.
Right.
And I bet they are literally gutted. I bet their guts are spilled out on the floor when they heard that.
Yeah.
They just decided to eviscerate themselves.
Yeah.
They heard that Microsoft has no more love for the Zune.
That's right.
What about the Zune Marketplace then?
I would say it would die.
Well, would it not be converted to the Windows Phone 7 Marketplace maybe?
I would say it would die.
Have they just killed the brand?
I mean, it's like the famous, Microsoft Plays for Sure, only it didn't.
Microsoft.
Sometimes they let go of those things. Yeah. You just got to move on. Buy your music through us; it'll be there for a lifetime, or maybe 3 years.
Yeah, you just got to kind of move on, don't you?
Yeah.
Did you see any stuff about those Amazon Kindles? Because you're a Kindle lover. Are you excited about any of those? Do you feel like I want a Kindle Fire? You got a little thing up there, or a Kindle Touch?
I'd scroll.
Advise me, Richard, because I'm actually. Hey, that didn't work. Richard tried to do some gestural thing with his mouse, and
tried to scroll. Decided that what I want to do is to resize to half the screen.
What browser are you using there, mate?
No, this isn't a browser. Sorry, this is my mind map tool. Oh. Things we're going to talk about. There's the Kindle Fire, Kindle Touch, and the Kindle.
The Kindle Classic. Classic. But it's not classic, is it? Because the classic one has a keyboard and that doesn't.
Well, that's right. So they got rid of the keyboard.
Well, you can't call it a classic then, really, can you?
Well, Apple did. Apple kept calling all their iPods with hard drives classics, even though they were different each time.
But they still hearkened back to the form factor and the interface of the old ones.
As this does, except they've taken the keyboard away.
Well, yeah, okay.
Okay, anyway, let's not argue.
Nitpicking.
So anyway, they've taken away the keyboard, and I initially thought, oh, okay.
Good idea, because the keyboard sucked.
And then I thought, I was a little bit disappointed, and then I thought, uses of the keyboard. Times I use the keyboard, can't think of anything.
Yeah.
The only real time you use it is to create a named collection, so if you want to organise your books, and I figure
you
could live with some other sort of painful interface on screen to do that for the rare occasions you want to do that. So I thought that was, reasonable decision, given that the keyboard looked a bit naff and it was kind of hard to use.
Does it look cheaper than the old Kindle that you've got? Like, just cheaper, nastier kind of construction? It's
always hard, though, when you take it. You're always going to get a photograph that's kind of...
Photoshopped, really, isn't it?
Shows it off to its best. So the Touch is obviously the natural progression. Sony have had a Touch one for... a year, 18 months, something like that.
Is that black and white? It is, eh?
It's still black and white. It's not, it's a slightly different technology, is my understanding of how it kind of works.
As in what, not e-ink?
Capacitive touch.
Oh, it's infrared or something.
It's like an infrared thing, yeah.
Yeah, look, presumably you only need some very rudimentary touching device, right? Like page forward, page back.
I think it said it.
Has it got a keyboard? Or like a virtual keyboard that you type things in?
Yeah, it does. I think it said it was like a multi-touch.
Wow.
I don't know why you'd want that, but,
Well, see, that might be what I did, because I'm thinking about getting an e-book reader for my daughter. And, we talked about this a while ago, and I guess...
Yes, it's multi-touch.
We didn't really have much of a range. Are these coming to Down Under? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. I have to say, the touch interface would be quite nice.
Yeah.
It's still hard to imagine e-ink being able to deliver on any kind of sensible experience.
Beyond reading books, you mean?
Well, you're used to... Because it won't be touch in an iPhone, iPad kind of way. It'll be... touch in an e-ink kind of way. So there'll be no flicking to scroll or flicking because Because e-ink can't update that fast. It can't really do...
Well, you flick and then you get a bit of a flash, right?
It just can't do scrolling. It would be the most hideous thing. So, there'll definitely be touch to, like, select things, I would say, and to sort of say next page and stuff. So that'll still be kind of nice-ish, but... I'd be quite keen to get my hands on it because what I think is quite interesting is quite an interesting engineering challenge, isn't there? That they've got this e-ink screen that's not really up to the task of
and then trying to overlay providing a user interface that's
a funky interface. Yeah. You know, it's really good at what it is, which is presenting text. And kind of seeing what they've managed to make of it.
Yeah, so. I have to say the graphics they've shown there to advertise it, that looks like quite a good high contrast. Sort of graphical interface there, which is not just text, but the pictures being shown there. That looks impressive. Yeah. If they could deliver that, what they're showing in that.
But the thing is, you know, e-ink can deliver images, and it can deliver images very well because it's got a high
lots of
pixel
great
density.
Graduations. And
But it can't scroll. It can't move, right?
So you can't do any kind of animation with e-ink. It just wouldn't work.
Really. I mean, they managed to do it in small areas so they can kind of, you know, mimic like the old cursor circling.
Oh, right,
But not, you can't, you know, you can watch movies or anything even vaguely close. Ah. And then there's the Kindle Fire, which is obviously just a, you know...
Tablet. It's just a playbook, actually, isn't it? From what everyone's saying. It's just a RIM playbook. They've scrapped all the fancy bits and just, you know, tarted up the operating system made in Amazon... it's basically just a vending machine, really, isn't it?
It is.
It's a vending machine from Amazon to sell you good stuff.
Yeah.
I'm happy about that. I'm in for that, you know?
Yeah. As long as it's cheap. Doesn't talk too much about battery life.
I think it's just your standard 8-9 hour battery life. You got videos and things, haven't you? Yeah. I'd be interested to see what magazine reading's like that on that device, to be honest. I'd be quite interested in that. Yeah.
It's got a dual core processor.
Oh, well, you need that. You know, no, so the thing that I'm fascinated by, Richard, that I'm actually quite excited about from a technology
perspective... It's pretty light, actually. I thought that was quite interesting. Yeah. 400 grams.
That doesn't really mean much to me. That's half a kilo, right?
An iPad, the original iPad was 800
is
grams.
Is it? Oh, it's half the weight of
the
iPad.
15% lighter, so 600 and something.
Yeah. So what excites me is the whole, what's that thing, the Silk browser.
Mm.
Now, does that not just sound fantastic? This kind of split client-server architecture for your browser, and it's using, you know, the fat back end of Amazon pipes to basically go and grab all that content, re-render it, and boil it down so that it fits nicely onto your little Kindle Fire browser. And all the connections are between your device and Amazon. And, you know, I mean, it's if they can pull it off and deliver a really good browsing experience, I'd be saying, hey, give me a Silk browser on my desktop, and I'll use that instead of the one I'm using.
So Amazon did this, right?
Yep.
Sorry, Opera did this.
Yeah, I don't think they didn't quite this far, though. Yeah, but you're right. They did a proxy.
You would proxy to Opera and Opera.
Yeah, But but Opera don't have the big ass...
They don't have the EC2.
The EC2 and the S3 and the AWS and basically the data center now of Amazon.
True.
So, and arguably, they probably didn't have even the programming expertise, I'm guessing, you know.
Yeah.
Are you not interested in that?
What problem is it solving?
Latency, I guess, and speed, and the
fact... I mean, it's Wi-Fi only, rightly, so most of the time I'm going to be connected to my broadband at home.
Maybe it's not just solving a problem, it's maybe creating opportunity where they can now just see all your surfing traffic.
Oh, I think there's definitely an opportunity for them,
So, you know, there's that sort of thing. But maybe they tried the browser out on it and it was a bit rubbish.
Maybe.
And it's like, crikey, we better build this fancy pants client server browser architecture because, you know, no one's actually going to want to use this browser the way it is. It's very similar to what Google do. They've got this protocol called Speedy, SPDY. I was reading up about it, which I think you've got to use an experimental version of Chrome or Chromium that's got it built in. And it basically uses a slightly proprietary, well, a very proprietary protocol between the browser, the Chrome browser, and stuff back in the Google headquarters to do a very similar thing. And basically they multiplex all the connections and the traffic over a few connections back to Google rather than, you know, spawning out all these connections to different back-end sources. And I suppose Amazon's doing the same thing here. Your browser's not connecting to multiple domains or even multiple connections back to the original domains. You're going back to Amazon. And Amazon makes connections back to the domains. It's just a man in the middle proxy, just with some with a big fat back end. I don't know. I'm excited by using other people's fat back ends. It's actually going to be one of the few things where actually having a fat back end is actually a good thing.
Yeah.
Not many women would be proud to have a fat back end.
No.
Or me neither, actually.
But, you know, web traffic. Web traffic wants a fat back end.
I want to use someone's fat back end.
That's right.
In order to get my web surfing done. So, I don't know. To me, it sounds... I just like to feel it. I like to try it out.
Okay. I'd like to try one.
Yeah, I'd like to try one.
Going back to your original question, I wonder when they are coming down under. I mean, they're not due out in the US quite yet.
November or something, and they'll probably be quite hard to sell there.
Yeah, mid-November. Yeah.
Hey, you know how... what browser are you using there?
I was going to say to you, did you notice the fact that I've changed browsers? So we had, I think, a few podcasts ago, I talked about how I don't use Chrome. I derided
you for using Chrome. You know?
But the latest version of Firefox just really upset me.
Well, you know,
it was so slow and so clunky and so unstable.
So you went.
Because I have no loyalty.
What about IE9 or IE8, man? Or
No, I think the problem with IE, I just have this mental block against IE. Yeah, it doesn't matter how good it gets.
IE7's a new IE6.
I don't use it on principle. Yeah? Even if it's great.
Well, hey, Richard. You know, again, there's gonna be claims of collusion between us.
Okay.
Because what I wanted to talk about was my conversion to Chrome.
Oh, so, okay, so you've gone all the way. What drove you across to Chrome?
Well, it wasn't Firefox.
Okay.
Per se. It wasn't Firefox.
It wasn't a push.
Safari's not necessarily been the greatest in Lion, but I found it okay. I haven't had too many problems. What probably pushed me was the fact that I've been using this browser extension called LastPass. I think I might have mentioned in the past, but I'll mention it again. And it works very nicely in Chrome. I think it works in all browsers, but it works nicely in Chrome. Chrome's also done the whole sort of Lion, that Lion full screen kind of experience.
Yep.
And they've integrated that a bit better.
Mm-hmm.
They've also got this thing called incognito mode, which is the sort of private anonymous browsing. And it was just a combination of those things. And I thought, damn it, I'm going to give it a go. I'm going to try it out for a week.
So what was LastPass again?
LastPass. Oh, I love LastPass.
Oh, is it a password?
It's a password manager. It's a cloud-based password manager, right?
Yeah.
So you've probably got the same problem I've got, or have had, where you've signed up innumerable sites, and because it's hard to remember passwords, you've ended up reusing rather insecure passwords, or they might have been really good passwords, but fact that you've duplicated and repeated them over and over again means that it's actually become quite insecure. And the whole reason I got into this space was actually because I saw a Google Plus thing from a friend who was bemoaning how how Chrome didn't support his password manager, and then that's why he had to stick with Firefox. And I thought, password managers, maybe I should really start getting a bit more savvy about this.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a look at what I was doing and looked at all the services I've been using and realized, I was reusing the same old password over and over again. Did a bit of research and, found LastPass got a really good reviews and, ratings from a variety of industry experts on security, as well as just, people using it. And I thought, hey, it's free.
Yeah.
Totally appealed to me.
Yeah.
It was free. Multi-platform, works on everything. They've got things like two-factor authentication that's kind of built in for free.
Okay.
Which it works by basically generating a grid, like a battleship's grid, that you then have to print and sort of
use. Like a one-time cipherpad.
Kind of, but it's reusable. They also have one-time passwords that you can use, so if you're logging in from an insecure, untrusted computer, you can actually use these one-time passwords and they will only be useful for that one session.
Okay.
Everything is stored in the cloud redundantly, but in an encrypted form.
Right.
So it doesn't even matter if they're, I don't know if they're an American company or not, the Patriot. People say, the Patriot, so, American can get this stuff. Well, bully for them. I don't care if the NSA or FBI gets this stuff, because they're just going to get gibberish. Because all the encryption, decryption happens on the in the browser or on the PC.
Right.
So anything that goes back to them is all encrypted.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have any of the keys, because it's all sort of hashed and salted and stuff. And, there's a whole bunch of security stuff, mumbo-jumbo, that I read up that sounds awfully convincing to me. That made me feel good and warm and fuzzy.
So the fact that all their data's stored on Dropbox, that's okay.
Well, actually, it's not. But I took a dump out of LastPass because you can export an encrypted XML sort of file with all your Vault, and I've stuck it into Dropbox. and things, because basically it's encrypted and I can then drag it down, or I've got multiple copies of it, and they provide a client application that runs on Windows or Mac. They probably have a Linux one as well, where you can read locally that encrypted vault and recover your passwords and add to it if you want. So they're sort of saying, look, we're a cloud-based service, but if we go away and disappear, you've still got your stuff.
Yeah.
And if anyone attacks us and steals our things, there's nothing, you know, there's nothing they can do with it. It's all encrypted. Yeah. And I really like that idea. It's kind of like, it's right. Whilst I think there are a lot of services out there where they hold keys.
Yeah.
So, you know, Dropbox was probably the canonical version, you know, canonical instance of that, right? Where people said, you know, where they said, oh, you can trust us. You know, even our administrators won't look at it or can't look at it. And then it's like, well, actually they can because they've got access to the keys.
Well, it's one of the reasons I use JungleDisk.
Exactly. Because, you're right. Again, it's all encrypted.
The keys are held. The keys are held by you. It's encrypted before it goes across the network.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Live Mesh, Microsoft Live Mesh was all SSL to the server, but on the server it was...
Ah, right. It's all unencrypted. Yeah. So I've got this, you know, crazy, long, impossible to... dictionary attack or guess master password.
Yeah.
And I'm using the generator, the secure password generator features in LastPass. So all the sites. So there is no, I'm buggered basically if I lose my vault, because there's no way that I could actually log into Amazon or I think I kind of know my Gmail thing, but there's a bunch of places, Dropbox, Boxnet, that there's no way I could get into them because I've got some randomized gibberish string. But I trust in cloud, in LastPass, I trust.
In trust, okay.
But I've taken some steps to, you know, create backups of the vault and stuff just in case.
You printed it, haven't you?
Yeah, but it's encrypted XML, so I can't read it. But I have got in hard copy. So no, I do you do anything like that, Richard? Are you doing any?
No.
Yeah, well, maybe you should. I implore all our listeners to start thinking about this.
So I do have different passwords for different tiers of applications that I use. But then I do repeat.
Yeah.
And I do have a password manager. It's not integrated into any of the browsers.
Yeah. Is it a password manager like application?
Yeah,
it is. Windows-y based thing?
Yeah, so it's Windows-based and then it syncs to the iPhone.
Ah.
Because it's more than just passwords. It's like, you know, social... No, we don't have social security number. Yeah, and
LastPass allows you to create secure notes.
Yeah.
Again, it's all encrypted, so you can put arbitrary content in there if you want.
Yeah.
What's the application you use?
I use eWallet by Ilium. Yeah. They've been around for, like, ever. I used it back on, like, iPack days.
Oh, wow, old school. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what kind of encryption's baked into that? Is it usually sort of 256 AES?
AES 256,
I think you could probably do this, you could home grow some of this stuff yourself.
But why would you?
Well, exactly, why would you? And you the integration thing's important. So how do you deal with, like, then typing in your passwords into sites?
As I say, most of my sites have the same password.
Oh, okay.
Because for the most part, I don't care whether someone steals my identity on that site.
Ah.
I have very few sites where I care strongly about who I am.
Yeah,
and they have different passwords.
Yeah.
Now, I've been trying to move slowly towards having a password per site, but it is a pain in the ass.
It's
unless you have
bummer,
something that actually manages it for you. Which is that.
Hey, there's another thing about Chrome I'm liking is that those little web apps, that web store.
Angry Birds.
Did you have to pay for that?
No.
Does it work very good?
Yeah, it works fine.
I might try that. Yeah, a free.
So presumably, is that some sort of simulation of the Chromium operating system?
I don't know.
Don't know?
You can kind of, in the Chrome browser, can't you run arbitrary executables anymore? And it's not Flash?
I don't think it's Flash.
Oh, well, you know what's bugged me? Which I didn't have a problem with Safari, because I used to run a plugin in Safari called Click to Flash or Click to Plugin, which meant that any time it rendered a screen which had Flash or some weird and wonderful plugin embedded in the page, it wouldn't actually start running. And so you'd actually have to physically click on it if you wanted that plugin to run. So that was fantastic because it meant large pages, you know, pages with all those kind of plugins and things embedded in there. They just render with little blocks, a bit like on an iPad, really, isn't it, without Flash. But that to me was a good thing because my browser was a lot more stable. Pages loaded faster. And I didn't get those annoying things, you know, when you go to pages and people embed Flash ads in there and they have you know, audio.
Yeah.
And ever since I started using Chrome, because that's built into the browser, you go on a web page and suddenly you start hearing about you know, ads for female sanitary products or for the latest, you know, household detergents. Yep. And I'm like, where's this, you know, where are these things coming from? And it's because there's some stupid little ad at the bottom of the page.
Yeah.
So that's the only downside I've found about Chrome. As well as I've noticed, sometimes the CPUs have gone absolutely bat crazy because the little Chrome Flash plugins, you know, chewing up all my CPU.
Oh, okay.
Which, yeah, that's a bit upsetting at times. So we had to go on and, you know, into Task Manager and kill the app. So anyway, yeah, you're showing Richard's got Angry Birds running inside his Chrome browser, and yes, it looks all right. Yeah. So do you rate it? Do you like it now? Are you used to it? Yeah. Or is it just bearable to you?
I'd say there's a habit. I tend to still go to Firefox, but as soon as I realise I'm using Firefox, I tend to go Chrome.
Why don't you not just take that out of your start menu thingy? You know, and then
I've got this weird thing. It's one of the quirky things about me. I've got multiple Gmail accounts.
Corporate
Gmail account, and I've got a personal Gmail account.
Right.
And whilst you can switch, it's actually just easier just to have one browser that's running my corporate identity and one that's running my personal identity.
Well, can't you have two windows from the same browser?
No, because it's all cookie-based. So that's what I used to use Internet Explorer for. That used to be my one of my two identities. So I used to run Firefox.
Your other go-to browser.
Yeah, because things like bookmarks, they're under one of my. You know,
yeah.
I just want one identity, really, but I don't want to commit to being my.
Do you like the synchronization? You know, of bookmarks and other stuff through the browser.
Does nothing for me.
Oh, okay. I quite like that.
Okay.
You know, where I create a bookmark or whatever on in the browser on my desktop at home, say, and then I go to work and it's running, you know, and I open up my browser. Oh, those things are...
Yeah, see, I tend to use Google bookmarks now. Like, okay. So actually push them away from the browser and write out. So that I can write notes about them and make them searchable. And stuff.
Oh, wow.
Because I tend to think, I remember I bookmarked that, but I can't remember how I bookmarked it. So I like to be able to search over them.
Does Chrome not use that Google bookmarks to do the bookmark synchronization?
I don't know.
No, I'm happy.
Yeah, I'm happy too.
I can't believe that we've kind of simultaneously moved away.
Well, I have to say, your discussion of it made me think about trying it when I was dissatisfied with Firefox.
Yeah, because we hated it.
Yeah.
Well, I hated Safari. Having said that, I've upgraded to Firefox 7 just this week. Didn't really notice any big difference. You know, they say it's got better memory management and all that stuff, but it's not like I leave it running all the time. Hey, so what's with this Ocelot?
Yeah.
On
Did you download it?
No, not yet. Oh. Is it downloadable yet? Oneric?
I don't know.
What I want to know is what does the word Oneric means?
Yeah.
Richard, please look it up.
I can't. Neither of us got internet connections.
I have a dictionary thing which I'm going to try and make happen. Yes, here we go. Lucky Apple MacOS has an offline non-cloud based. Yeah. I think so. And I'm using the British Oxford English Dictionary thing. I'm going
to
type
to spell it.
The Oneric. Oh dear, that's not coming up. Maybe it's not cloud based. I mean, maybe it's not local. Okay. No, it would appear actually that word probably needs to go to the cloud to look it up. Didn't realise that.
Yeah, Mike, we'll bring that to you next time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. Oneric Ocelot. I would have thought Oscillating Ocelot would be better. But I think we'll give it a go.
Yeah.
I think I'll have to download it.
Well, I downloaded the Windows 8 beta, but I forgot to install it.
Right.
So we'll do that next time.
Yeah.
It was like a big... Because I sent you the thing. This is where it started. Because this is where I found out you were sick. So I downloaded it. And I was saying, you know, I was surprised the 64-bit version was an extra 800 megs over the 32-bit version.
It's quite good value.
Well, I didn't realise the extra bits required more space.
Right.
I just thought that was the speed, you know, the width of the bus.
It was clearly the architecture. You're ignorant, Richard. And uninformed again. No, it actually has something to do with how fat it is.
I suspect it's another one of those. It's got all the 64-bit and it's got all that 32-bit crap
baked into it.
That's needed to make that stuff work.
Yeah. So did you download that over your fat backend?
Somebody else's fat backend.
Yeah, so. Really. I ran it up in VirtualBox because I read all these things saying you can run it in VirtualBox.
Yeah.
I think they were wrong. Okay. So my experience so far of Windows 8 has been, well, I can, you know, bring up the Metro look. I can't run any of the applications, so none of these little, which apparently they're really trivial apps anyway, but none of them would start up. And then I could get to the full desktop.
Well, hey.
And back again.
And that looked a bit like Windows 7.
Yeah, so kind of not impressive, but I'm not blaming Windows 8 for that, or Metro. I'm kind of blaming
VirtualBox. You're blaming Oracle.
I am. damn them for actually ruining VirtualBox.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to say, VirtualBox is a fantastic free VM.
Yeah.
You know, you really, if you don't want to spend a lot of money, if you're cheap, that's me.
Having said that, you know, VMware's VM is free.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
You have
to get a license, but it doesn't cost you anything.
I don't understand.
The problem with it is that they rewrote, well, my personal experience of it, they rewrote the VMware. Because VMware's got lots of different versions, right?
Yeah.
There's the server grade one, but at the VMware player, or the VMware, I think it, not workstation, there's somewhere in between. Yeah.
This is a Windows thing you're talking about here, Richard, isn't it? Because Windows.
Ah, yes, yeah,
VMware Fusion, which is what you're doing with Mac, right. This is your definitely
problem.
You have to pay.
So for Windows, it's free, yeah. But the main problem was, anyway, was that they rewrote a lot of the user interface to be web based, and it just didn't work.
Right.
It was clunky and horrible and only worked in certain browsers.
So it's free because it's rubbish.
Yeah. But it may no longer be rubbish, and you know, maybe I should give another go. But yeah. I don't really like having too many virtual machines. They tend to install sorts of virtual drivery crap all over my machine.
Yeah.
And you can never get rid of it.
Is it?
Yeah.
I know, like, you have to install things like virtual guest editions, but they go into the virtual.
But actually, that creates services that are on your the host machine as well to try and.
That doesn't happen on macOS, Richard.
I just don't think you see it.
No, I don't. Truly, I do not believe it does that. I think that's a Windows aberration.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry to say.
So you win some, you lose some.
Yeah.
You don't have a free one, but, you know, what you get is good.
Well, exactly. It just works, doesn't it? Yeah.
So the other thing I want to talk about Google was I was reading that Google have Google stores in the UK. Did you read that?
No, they're like Microsoft stores and Apple stores.
Yeah,
where you actually go.
Well, yeah, they are. But they're not a separate store. They're like a little mini store inside with dedicated staff, they said.
Is that like going to Dick Smith's or Harvey Norman, and they got a little Apple store?
Yeah,
Apple
but they've got
there.
Dedicated staff.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, and they do searches for you.
And they sell Chromium. They sell Chromium.
Oh, Chromebooks.
Chromebooks.
Yeah. I thought you'd just go to them and you say, can you please tell me if there are any Mexican restaurants
And what's the definition
in London?
Of honoric?
Honoric, yeah. No, they don't do that for
they
you.
They don't do that, no.
Well, they could do that as by way of demonstrating a Chromebook, Richard.
But they will sell, they'll sell you a Chromebook. And they said that, you know, they were so busy, they had a double staff.
I was going
to
say, are they actually selling? Are they selling?
Apparently so.
3 to 6,
there's
what,
always,
the whole
there's
world?
A fanboy for every occasion.
three to six staff, what, in every store?
There's only one store, so yes, in every store.
Which country or place is this again?
United Kingdom.
United Kingdom?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have imagined that. Why
there? Why did they target the... I don't know.
Why would they go there? The English don't even use the internet, do they?
Well, I'm sure they do.
Well, not since the riots.
No, that's true.
They shut down the internet.
True.
You know?
Yeah.
So that makes no sense to me at all. Did you hear 3D's dead?
Oh, is it?
Yeah, apparently they're not... The 3D's dead. Numbers don't lie, and things like viewerships and money being made from 3D films is in dramatic decline.
Right.
So it's all over. And I couldn't be happier. I could not be happier.
I was going to say, couldn't be less.
Yeah.
But couldn't be happier is even a stronger reaction.
I couldn't be happier, because that means that maybe we'll get less or fewer crappy 3D films shoved down our throats.
Maybe.
So they still will make them, but they're not going to try and convert every film into 3D or just do it for everything. So I think we've gone through that.
So
there'll
be the kind
of
films where 3D might make a difference.
Yeah, like, I don't know, I can't think of anything.
No.
Maybe one of those superhero films, you know, like Avengers.
Oh, well, then it's like there'd be no more superhero films. Then I would be happy. No more films based on DC Comics.
Well, I like Marvel.
Or Marvel.
No, I mean, so like Thor, I haven't seen that, but I've heard good things about it. Captain America.
In 3D?
I don't know.
Okay.
Captain America, I've heard very good things about that. The Avengers film coming out in 2012. Obviously, I can't
Another
hear...
Another Avengers film.
I can't hear good things.
Oh, different Avengers.
No,
the UK Avengers.
No.
No.
No, they were the Avengers.
Yeah.
No, were they?
The Avengers.
Patrick Sneed.
Patrick Sneed? Something like that.
Steed?
McNee?
Sneed.
Sneed.
Anyway. Yeah.
No, Steve was the actual character.
Steve. Patrick, what was the name of the actor?
Yeah, Patrick something.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Anyway.
Yeah.
Not there.
And Joanna Lumley.
Yes.
Well, when she was
Avengers.
When she was
the she new, wasn't a good
she
one,
was
though.
New Avengers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, they were good, weren't they?
Yeah, they were great.
Wasn't Diana Rigg? Wasn't Diana Rigg?
That's right.
Yeah. Man, I didn't think you were old enough to know the original Avengers.
Oh, yeah.
I love the original Avengers.
Yeah, because there's a huge age gap between us. Well, what are we talking here, like 4 years, yeah, 3 years?
Well, generations, Richard. Yeah. It's half a generation almost, you know.
Okay.
You know, that, oh, wow. Well, no, that we're talking Marvel Comics, The Avengers.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I thought you'd be all for that. You like Iron Man? You like Iron Man? That's good.
Yeah, so one film I like justifies an entire genre.
Well, you know, it's called about a franchise. They're going to make money somehow.
They're not a franchise. They're like a... No.
Yeah. Now, I've got this brilliant idea, Richard.
Okay.
I actually think it's a revolutionary, magical thing that's come about since Apple have released these Thunderbolt ports mm-hmm. into these machines. And the fact that you can now buy, external SSDs or SSD drives.
Okay.
So this is what my thought is. If all my computers were basically like these little MacBook Airs or iMacs that have these Thunderbolt ports...
It's quite an expensive thought.
Let's just say the world was scattered with these things.
Yeah.
Then I could basically be completely mobile computing, and completely portable. Mm. If I had an SSD...
You are portable today.
Yeah, yeah. But if I had just an SSD, mm-hmm. like a 256 gig SSD, mm-hmm. that's in some kind of like, portable mm-hmm. chassis with a Thunderbolt port,
mm-hmm.
and then because that Thunderbolt port runs at, 10 gigabits?
Mm-hmm.
I just have to go up to any machine that has a Thunderbolt port, plug it in, boot off my external drive, yeah. but because it's so damn yeah. fast, you wouldn't even know that it's an external drive.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even have to use I would not have to use an internal drive in the machine. When I finish there, I unplug it, I go home, I plug it in something else, I'm back with completely the same machine state.
So really you're talking about like a sort of some sort
external
of
boot, basically external boot yeah. off Thunderbolt.
But you're just wandering around using other people's fat back ends.
Yes, yeah. exactly, and fat front ends. Actually, cool, my MacBook here is a very svelte, thin front end.
Front end, yeah.
And use people's fat back ends, yeah. and I'm just providing the stuff in the middle.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that I'd always wanted to do, and for a long time the only real option was to virtualize, so... It was kind of like if I can go to any device and it had a virtual host, like a virtual box, and I could run up a virtual machine that was running on
it. But it's not so slow. And painful. Right? Yeah. And it's over USB or something through the cloud.
So yeah, you could.
You should try that. I just don't think anyone's really thought about doing this.
Yeah.
It just came to me.
I bet Google has.
I don't think they buy into Thunderbolt.
True.
I mean, hardly anyone else has.
Yeah, true.
So, but, to me, we're looking at a possible revolution and personal mobile computing, and I'm just going to be walking around my little Thunderbolt attachable SSD
hanging out of someone else's
yeah. fat back end. Well, Richard, I think
one of the disadvantages of our new recording studio is that we need to vacate.
Yeah, we need to get home.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to talk about Star Wars in HD next time.
Okay.
Star Wars and Blu-ray has been released.
Thank God. Is it going to be in 3D?
Well, no. No, it's only 2D. It won't be 50 years' time, maybe. Yeah. So we're going to talk about that. Because I've been sick, I haven't been sort of keeping up with things like Star Trek, but I'll try and get back online.
It's interesting that when you're sick, you don't turn to Star Trek.
Yeah, I don't turn to much else, actually. All right. So this has been great. Good experiment. I think it's been successful. We'll find out once I render this baby.
Okay.
Thanks for geeking out with us.
We're the Ministry of Geek.